Hi, everybody. This is Scott Callon. Thank you so much for joining. I'm joined, as usual, by Dan Morizaku in our finance department, who never seems to get to say anything. So let's see if we can change that today. Are we working off of the fiscal year 19 to Q1 corporate presentation that's on our website? And again, thank you very much, everybody, for your time today. Before I go into the presentation itself, as you know, there's been an incredibly tragic natural disaster in western Japan, and we do express our deepest condolences to all those who have been affected. It's been the largest series of rainfall and damage that Japan has experienced in several decades. Let me turn to the quarter's results. I'll start with the summary on page 6. Look, we think it's our job, and of course, to deliver to all of you a durable earnings model. And by that, we mean that we have substantial security in the profitability of the firm we run. So our stock earnings, so those are contractual earnings, based on asset management contracts, based on rental contracts, are substantially above our fixed expenses. They're actually running 233% above them. And that will persist and will continue to grow that into the future. On the right side of the page, you can see that the stock earnings growth is happening across the board, overwhelmingly in with the big gains in value add and in the clean energy business, but all three of our businesses are growing. At the bottom of the page, you can see that we continue to generate high margins on our sales of gross profit margin in the first quarter of 33%. We are being selective on acquisitions. It's a very strong operating environment. We think we're very well positioned for it. We think there is a lot of very exciting growth in front of us. We also think, along with all those things, simultaneously, we should be cautious in where we buy. And as you know, the overwhelmingly single dominant and most important criterion for us is, can we add value? And can we buy an asset at a good price in a place that we can add substantial value? And so we have been able to buy assets that we think offer substantial upside to our shareholders. And to be clear, that shareholder value comes by creating real economic and societal value, by taking assets that are poorly positioned or poorly run or poorly capexed and bringing them to the quality standards of the 21st century. In the first quarter itself, we acquired, and this is what will show up in our financial statements, about 7 billion yen, so at 100 yen to a dollar, U.S. $70 million. We actually contracted for another 20 billion more, so those transactions will close over the next two quarters, and so all in, there's about 27 billion yen of acquisitions that are done or to be completed. As you know, we established a new business last year, Ichigo Owners, which serves individuals who want real estate ownership. Historically, we provided real estate services within to external parties within our two REITs and our Yoko, which is actually a solar Yoko, but within Ichigo Office REIT and Ichigo Hotel REIT. This is a business where we acquire assets and on behalf of real estate owners, sometimes we sell and just only sell, and thank you very much, Ichigo, you found a good asset, you added some value to it, we'll take it from you here. In other cases, we have an ongoing asset management relationship with it. I can tell you, though, that the market is very well bid for real estate assets, and so the idea that we can just pass something through, we buy it at X, we sell it for 1.1X, is not really possible because X is a high number. And so we need to be buying things and are buying things where it'll be a fast value-add process where we actually are adding value to the assets before we deliver them to end clients. And that's something we're fully capable of doing and we are doing. But the key difference with owners, Ichigo Owners, its business model, is it's a high turnover model. We tend to buy better assets in really good locations. As you can see, 95% of the Ichigo Owners assets we bought are in central Tokyo. We do a lighter amount of value add, and we deliver it to an end client. Page 7 shows the financial outcomes of Q1. OP up 90%, net income up 59%. We did two buybacks last year, so it was a little bit of an EPS effect. So we have EPS coming in at plus 60%. Earnings are up across the board, and we're on track to record earnings for the year. Turning to page 8, you can see the breakdown, the segment earnings. The one that's down, asset management, is down 10%. That's on performance fees that we recorded last year. We didn't record in the first quarter. But the ongoing AM fees are actually up 9% year-on-year. Significant growth, a double in our earnings in the value-add business year-on-year on both growth in rental income and gains on value-add sales. You can see most of the growth is coming out of the value-add sales activity. It is a wonderful time to be a seller of real estate assets. And then very substantial growth in the clean energy business. That's primarily on the coming online of the Ichigo Shiroma solar power plant last fall. Turning to the business model, and I'll go through quickly through this. I mean, this is something we think it's important to describe what we do and the drivers of our returns. So you've seen these charts before. They've been updated for page 10 and for the first quarter. It is a business with both stock earnings that are substantially above their fixed expenses and flow earnings. And the flow earnings are primarily profits on value-add real estate sales. Page 11 shows the appraisal value based on realized gains. I'll turn to on the next page as to why we think those are extraordinarily conservative. But it is a feature of our business that we, in effect, embed forward earnings, that the gains we realize from our value-add activity are recognized on an accounting basis only when we sell an asset. But when we have clearly improved an asset and its NOI is up 20%, 30%, 40%, it is more valuable. And so there is a growing stock. It's kind of a future earnings bank that we build. And look, I mean, if we thought the time was right to sell everything, we could sell everything. There is an ongoing value activity in everything that we do. And we earn good rental income, and the BOJ continues to hoover up JGBs, and there's a shortage of yield assets in the economy. So we have time on our side in terms of the ongoing rental income contribution from owning assets. We have time on our side from ongoing value add activity, which continues to improve assets. And we, in fact, have time on our side with the BOJ continuing to pull assets out of the system, driving, therefore, real estate prices up as a substitute yield asset within the Japanese economy. Page 12 gives you the difference between so the previous page we showed you the unrealized gains, and page 12 shows you what we actually realize. So in the fiscal year 16-2, we generated 2.2x what the implied unrealized gains were from the appraisal value in fiscal year 17-2, that was 1.6x. In the year that was closed in February 2018, it was 4.4x. And the first quarter, we're at 2.2x. So if you average that out, it's in general, we're getting more than, not just in general, we are generating 2.5x what the implied appraisal value tells you are the unrealized gains in our book. And we think that is actually a pretty accurate measure of the value creation that has occurred that is still to be realized. Page 13 shows our part of a capital structure that's debt. Actually, for the first time here, we're showing not only how long we borrow for, but the average remaining loan maturity. We borrow for about 10 years at this point. The average maturity is about 8 years. You can see we've continued to have a drop in the level we finance. Not only is it a great time to be a real estate seller in Japan, it's actually a great time to be a borrower. And our credit, kind of our credit worthiness continues to grow. We continue to borrow at better terms and conditions, not only on the interest rate, but broadly across the kind of how long we can borrow, the degree of collateralization, et cetera. Let me turn to page 15 to touch on both kind of growth in our core business and in new initiatives. The value-add business is doing enormously well, and we expect and we're well en route to generating what we expect to be at least 24% plus year-on-year on our stock earnings, meaning the kind of the more fixed earnings, and another 19% on the value-add on the flow earnings. We are being selective on asset acquisitions. You can see on the right hand of the page, we've actually sold slightly more on a fully kind of not just contracted but settled base in the first quarter. And on the acquisition side, you can see that we're doing. There's actually more to come. You'll see more hotels and retail coming into the portfolio. That reflects two things. Primarily reflects our ability to add value. Those are both our more complicated assets and therefore harder to run well. So we have an ability to manage them more effectively than most market participants. In the case of hotels, the second issue is there was we thought a mispricing of hotel assets based on kind of a not fully realized expectation of what the government's attitude was going to be on Minpaku, Airbnb, and we thought that there had been overly discounting of the hotel asset class with the surge in inbound and with regulation appearing in June of this year that we thought was actually going to choke down supply of Minpaku / Airbnb sorts of offers, and that has occurred. Which is to say, the hotel earnings are going very well. We do expect to do a substantial number of sales of our hotels also, in a context where we think we bought them at a good price for our shareholders, and now that people have seen what the Minpaku regulation is looking like and the supply impact of that, we're able to sell at a price that reflects genuine, positive, ongoing forward economics. Page 16 is a value-add case. Look, we try to, you know, we want people to know how we add value, and so we, you know, on a regular basis, we show you cases. Okay, this is here's an asset. This is what we did, and so this is in Machida, which is a Tokyo on the, it's outside of central Tokyo. It's on the Chuo line. There was an asset that was kind of bars and offices and kind of all over the block. We looked at it and realized that it could be focused on beauty-centered retail. We made it a much nicer. We put a CapEx in it to make it aesthetically far more pleasing. It had some illegal building code issues. We fixed them. As part of the re-tenanting, of course, the whole view on, hey, this could really work, there's demand in the area for beauty-centered retail, was a realization that tenants would be willing to pay for that because there's a strong business case to be made for it, so we brought in the tenants. We do everything we can to try to drive greater value and higher efficiency from the assets we own, so we converted non-revenue-generating common areas into actual space that tenants could have for themselves. We converted unused area to revenue-generate parking. And the final thing, and we do this very systematically, you can actually improve quality standards while decreasing costs. You know, it is important to us that we do both. And if you choose between reducing costs and improving quality, we will always go for improving quality. But in this case, the economies of scale we have, and if I can put it this way, the professionalism we bring to how to run assets allows us to do both. Page 17 shows what's happening in clean energy. We've taken the Ichigo Green off the page. I mean, we note that there are another 29 megawatts of Ichigo Green assets we manage, but they're not on our balance sheet. So the bar graphs show just what we own ourselves. There's 82 megawatts currently under operation. We've got another 66 megawatts that are in development, meaning these have fixed bid contracts in place. We understand what the economics are going to be. That implies 81% growth off of the existing asset base. There is a pipeline behind this, so this is just everything that's fixed and going to happen. And so, as Taro says, we're scaling rapidly in clean energy. We think there is a very big ongoing opportunity for us in that space. Page 18 turns to, and 19 turns to some new initiatives. Quite honestly, we have so many new initiatives, it's a little bit hard to know which ones we should put on the page, meaning there is a significant commitment being reflected in the hiring, including in the technology space, for us to develop new businesses that are lighter asset and non-asset. So a lot of things going on. But we chose to point you to two things that are happening pretty soon. So on page 18, we're opening our second The Knot hotel. We opened The Knot Yokohama in December. The Knot Tokyo in Shinjuku is opening on August 8th. It is a major, major rework of, we put out a release on it yesterday or 2 days ago. We effectively completely transformed a 40-year-old structure, leaving only the core, did new seismic retrofit, improved everything, the energy efficient air conditioning, the waterworks. And so it opens out onto Shinjuku Central Park. What's interesting to us is that we initial thought was that this is going to primarily be serving Japanese travelers. It's actually getting a huge response from North American, primarily U.S., in terms of what the reservation queue looks like, which is actually not surprising. What's important about the Knot offer is that the boutique hotel class doesn't really exist in Japan, and so you have this yawning gap between budget hotels and luxury hotels, and we think this is exactly, this is a very big need. The luxury hotels are charging $300 to $500 a night. The budget hotels are charging kind of $60 to $90 a night. At a boutique hotel, we can charge $150, and the economics are really powerful, and it's a much better experience for the hotel guests. So the second opening of the Knot is on August 8th. We have plans in place to open up a Knot in, Hiroshima. Hakata, which is in Fukuoka, and the third one is, I think, Sapporo. So we are en route doing more. At the end of the day, this could very well become a brand business, as I said. At this point, these are our hotels, but the Knot could become something that we do licensing for, and it becomes a non-asset business with extremely high returns. And by the way, I would point out the returns running it with our own hotel are very high also, but effectively when it becomes a licensing business, the ROE is infinite, and we're very happy with that. The second thing on page 19 in terms of the new initiative is we are getting close to the launch of our hotel AI system. We will be directing it primarily at our own assets. Through this fiscal year, and then we actually expect to turn towards selling it externally sometime next year. That's of course dependent upon. We've done a bunch of work on this, so we're confident it's going to work well. But it is dependent upon it proceeding as planned, and that this would be another example of us building out kind of a real estate technology set where we could use it ourselves, and the concept is very much kind of an Amazon AWS concept, but we could use this hotel system ourselves, but the ability to deliver it to hotel operators across Japan and be able to use their data will make the system more successful. So we think this is a really exciting potential driver, again, of very high returns for our shareholders. Those are my prepared remarks, and I'm happy to take any and all questions or feedback on any topic. So the way this works is you press star and then one if you want to ask a question or make a comment or provide any and all feedback. And if you want to cancel, you can press star two. So we're happy to take any and all questions and feedback. Please press star one.
Yeah, hi. It's Will Montgomery from CLSA.
Hi, Will.
Hi. Cool. Thank you for the update. Just a very specific question on the one value add example you provided. So what would you say is the rough IRR on that 3-year project? Just from a return on equity or cash on cash basis. And how is that going to be going forward as well in your estimates?
Well, the IRR was 163%.
Okay.
So that's not typical for us. And actually, I hesitated to use as an example in case someone asked me what the IRR was, and it's extraordinarily high. That's a function of a couple things. One is we grew NOI 31%, and so kind of roughly 30% of the return is coming, well, of course, it's coming from that. The rest is rectifying the asset. It was illegal, and it has become legal, so that's a value driver. We had some improvement in market conditions over the last 3 years is another driver. And the final one is we actually sold it to the owner next door. So there is potential economics to the owner in terms of any sort of future redevelopment. It was kind of bread and butter value add for us, buy the asset. And you should know, we always talk to the owner of a next door asset, meaning the way it works in Japan is it can be very difficult to do redevelopment. There's been loosenings of FAR. You really want to have a larger plot rather than a smaller plot. But this had blowout, wonderful economics. More typical for us is going to be, you know, we have very powerful economics, so a 30 to 50% IRR is more typical, but that's what this one was, 163.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and I'm sorry, I did notice back on the portfolio page there are the forecast IRR. So you don't really need to answer the second part of my question.
One thing I would add is that we almost always beat these IRRs. So this is what the internal guys who are managing the asset are managing too. So you can add a fair amount to these numbers has been the outcome, and part of that, of course, is that market has been good, and we understand that. But part of it is we tend to be conservative about what we think the value add is, and guys who are being measured against us want to beat it, and that's why we end up beating the numbers.
Okay, the next question. I mean, I think it's fairly well understood the amount of S-class supply, you know, coming to the market this year and the next couple of years. And I think you've mentioned in the past that your office portfolio is somewhat, protected from that impact. But just curious if you were seeing any, are you seeing confirmation of that, and that your rents and your negotiations are firm, or are you starting to see any kind of change in market conditions as far as vacancy going forward and rent trends going forward?
Yeah,
broadly speaking.
Japan, well, thank you. I mean, look, Japan has effectively quasi rent control, right? So. If you're in a rental contract, there's a process to raise rents, but it's very difficult to do so. And this is part of the reason why we're a value add real estate owners, because we actually seek to add value. We talk to a tenant up front about it. We'll say we're gonna give you brand new air conditioning systems, and it costs some money. And in return, we'd be grateful if we could raise the rent 5%. You agree that in advance and all that sort of thing. What's happened, Will, that's important is because rents have actually gone up, not for people in place, but there's a very, very strong demand for rental for office space. We are, along with every other market participant, long vacancy, which is to say, if a tenant moves out, you've died and gone to heaven. Just to be clear, that's a good thing. Meaning, if the tenant stays in place, you can raise rents 2%, 3%, 4%. I mean, typically, if you're doing value add, you can raise rents more than that based on an agreement with the tenant. But if they actually just move, then it's like, hey, we can raise the rent 20%, 30%. So it's a way of saying that almost every well-positioned, good asset in a good location, it's got significant upside if there's tenant turnover. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, that's interesting. Thank you. I'll get off the line, and maybe there's been some additional people join the queue. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Will. Looks like we do have another question from Polygraph.
Hi, Chris. Richard here.
Hi, Richard.
Congratulations on your numbers.
Thank you.
Just had a quick question on with regard to the storage business, which you discussed in previous presentations. How is the business going? And could you give us an update on it, please?
So the question is about the storage business. It's going fine. We wondered whether or not we should stick the storage business as a page in this. I promise you, utter transparency. We want to have shareholders and investors who understand the company, and so I will help give you kind of what you understand to be candor and directness. So let me tell you what's great about storage and what's challenging about storage. Well, the challenging part is easy. The assets are small, and so you really, really need to work to create scale. I'm done with the challenges. What's great about storage is it has, so there's a little bit of a Japanese context here where, by the way, we do kind of remote, kind of remotely controlled, fully air-conditioned, security system sensors, smart locks, beautiful kind of storage facilities, and so it's not kind of the U.S.-style drive-up with your pickup truck and put something in the garage thing. And it's particularly it's very suitable for Japan because what's happening is as real estate prices go up and the costs of – and construction costs go up, the costs of residents are going up. And as much as possible, new residential tenants, you know, they want to actually have space. They also want to have storage space, but they don't really want to eat up living space with storage space. So what's happening is you're seeing brand-new apartments, condos, et cetera, being built with less storage space in the apartment, but with storage providers like ourselves nearby. And so that's how you solve for the problem of having maximizing living space and also having sufficient storage. So it is very little storage penetration in the Japanese market. I mean, kind of order of magnitude is probably less than 10% per capita, for example, the U.S. There's a lot of growth available. We're growing very, very fast at multiples of the market growth. And we have kind of a window back in terms of the way that Japanese residences are being built out. The other thing I was going to say about storage is once people move their stuff in, they tend not to ever move it out. And so what happens is you fill it over time, and once it becomes full, it becomes very bond-like in terms of economics. So I guess I have a question for Dan. He's here. Dan, you want to add anything on that?
Maybe I should add the updated number of the units so far. At the end of February, we had 27 facilities and almost 3,600 units. Currently, we are a little over 4,000 units, so we are in pretty good shape on track to hit the looking at the expansion plan. So
3 month growth of 10% plus.
Right.
We're growing a lot faster in the market. It's one of the things that's the case about storage, and part of the explains is we have good technology, we have a good network, we also have capital. So because it does take the time to fill up storage units, generally kind of there's a J curve, and it's like a 2 to 3 year to full before then you have this bond that runs forever. We like it a lot. The value creation of it is not merely directly from, we can possibly get to scale, and there could be a storage REIT in the future, et cetera. But the other thing that's been very helpful for us is it's been a way for us to make greater kind of run our current assets harder. it's like, well, wait a minute, we have this building and a storage on what, you know, a storage taking one floor of the building and turn to storage is actually the optimal usage. So it's been nice to drive additional economics from a wide variety of office and retail and residential assets. Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, I think we're done. Thank you, everybody. It's an honor and a pleasure to work for you. We look forward to delivering you some returns that we think you'll be very happy with. Everybody have a very good day. Thank you.